And so in our last class, we were looking at these elements, and we saw that that we're to partake of these elements in memory of Christ. So we know that there's no power in the elements themselves, but the power has to do with the remembrance. Now this is to, as we partake, this is to cause us to think about what, or to remember Christ and remember what He has done for us. We should remember what or who He is and why He had to come. So we know, we recognize that He's deity and He's God. And He left heaven to and took on the form of man for a reason, okay? There was a need. And this, you know, mankind was lost in sin. And there was only one way to be able to overcome that, and that's through Christ, okay? Through His death. So we see that there was a cost. He gave His life, or He died, so that we might live. And this is things we need to recognize. And I'm not saying that we don't, but I mean we need to truly remember this and focus on that. And so that is what we need to be remembering. When we partake, we're proclaiming that we believe in and we trust in this. So when we truly think about what was done for us, that should cause us to reflect on our own life. Okay? Think about the life we're living. Does it show that that's who we're serving? Does it show that we truly remember what was done for us? And does our life or our walk reflect that? So we see that we are to, as we were looking at in the last class, we are to eat the bread and drink the cup or drink the fruit of the vine. Now, as mentioned in the last class, that and maybe one previous, this cup is put forth the contents of the cup. And in this setting, it's clearly that the contents is specific to the fruit of the vine. So we eat this bread, which represents the body, and we drink this fruit of the vine, which represents the blood or the death. So in our last class, I think where we left off was at the top of y'all's page 80. So if we turn over to John 6, I don't think we got a chance to read that. Okay, in John 6, first we'll look at verse 35. Now this is Jesus speaking. Now I think I mentioned in the last class, this isn't talking about the Lord's Supper, but this gives us an idea of what Jesus spoke about concerning the bread. Jesus said to them, "I am the bread of life. He who comes to me will not hunger. He who believes in me will never thirst." Okay, now if you jump down, we'll read verses 50 through 56. "This is the bread which comes down out of heaven, so that one may eat of it and not die. I am the living bread that came down out of heaven. If anyone eats of this bread, he will live forever. And the bread also which I will give for the life of the world is my flesh." Then the Jews began to argue with one another, saying, "How can this man give us his flesh to eat?" So Jesus said to them, "Truly, truly, I say to you, unless you eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink His blood, you have no life in yourselves. He who eats my flesh and drinks my blood has eternal life, and I will raise him up on the last day. For my flesh is true food, and my blood is true drink. He who eats my flesh and drinks my blood abides in me, and I in him. So, although this is talking about Jesus and his reason for coming, we can still see as we partake of these elements, we can, although these elements are not, we're not partaking physically of his body and of his blood like some might practice, but we're partaking in remembrance of what was done for us. So I just wanted to put that in there. Now, so this is not speaking of the Lord's Supper, but it is speaking of the very thing that we're declaring as we partake. Remember what we had looked at when we were looking at the idea of communion or sharing in 1 Corinthians 11:26. You don't have to turn there because I know we looked at it a couple of times, but remember it said, as often as you eat this bread and drink this cup, you proclaim the Lord's death. Okay? So in this lesson, we have been speaking of the elements and what they stand for. I also want us to look at some specifics about the elements. We are to eat the bread and drink the cup. So, why these elements? Simply just because that's what the Lord's commanded. That's what He specified. So, the question is, can we use any kind of bread? Does it matter? Now, this is specified that we're to use unleavened bread. Now, let's read Mark 14:1. And all I'm wanting to do here is this idea that we've already looked, we know we're supposed to eat the bread and drink the cup or fruit of the vine. But I just want to look at just a couple verses that show specifically what this bread is and also speaking of the fruit of the vine. So in Mark 14:1, I'm getting the right book. 14:1, it's talking about now the Passover and unleavened bread were 2 days away. So we see around what time this is. Now if you jump to verse 12, it said on the first day of unleavened bread, when the Passover lamb was being sacrificed, we see the setting and the time that this was. Because it was talking about when they were to prepare this Passover, and this is right after that when Jesus institutes the Lord's Supper. So we know around the setting. Also, one thing to consider, is this bread a different bread than in down in verse 22? That's when they start talking about the Lord's Supper. While they were eating, He took some bread. That's when they start going into this idea of the Lord's Supper instituted. So, is that bread here any different from the bread in verse 12? No. It's going to be the same type of bread. What about in Matthew 26:17? again, you see this idea. Now on the first day of unleavened bread, we see this time period. And then in verse 26, while they were eating, Jesus took some bread. So again, we see that whatever this bread is in 26 is going to be the same type of bread. And also in Luke 22, in 22:1, again, same idea. Now the feast of unleavened bread, which is called the Passover, was approaching. Verse 7, then they came the first day of unleavened bread, on which the Passover had been sacrificed. And then go down to verse 19. It's when they're talking about this partaking in when he had taken some bread and given thanks. Okay, so we see again this idea of this bread in verse 19. So, what does that really tell us about this bread? As far as, okay, we understand it was the bread that was taken in this time period of this unleavened bread or this unleavened feast. So, what else do we know about that?
We know that it was for 7 days they weren't allowed to have anything that was leavened. So anything that happened in that time period would have to be that bread.
Right, because they wouldn't even have leaven in the house, right? Okay. Okay, so and I just put just a couple little verses here because it's not limited to these verses. I just picked a couple. I believe on this word search, I think it got quite a bit of stuff. But in Exodus 12:15. Exodus 12:15 says that very thing that Sally was mentioning. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. So we see this idea of this 7 days of no leaven. But on the first day you shall remove leaven from your houses. And for whoever eats anything leavened from the first day until the seventh day, that person shall be cut off from Israel. So we see this idea that they were not to have this leaven in the house. So, and also in 13:6, again, same idea, for 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. And on the seventh day you shall it shall be a feast to the Lord. Or there shall be a feast to the Lord. And in, we'll just look at two more. In 23:15, still in Exodus. You shall observe the feast of unleavened bread. For 7 days you are to eat unleavened bread, as I commanded you. And also in 34:18. You shall observe the feast of unleavened bread. For 7 days you are to eat unleavened bread, as I commanded you. So we see over and over this idea that they were not to have leaven. And when this was instituted, when this Lord's Supper was instituted, this was right after that feast, or during, however you want to call that. So there wouldn't have been leaven in the house. And as we just looked at, this bread, whatever this bread was that they were partaking as a Lord's Supper, or as the Lord was instituting to be taken in remembrance of Him, this was during or following the Passover Supper, however you want to call that. but this within the same setting. So that's that same bread. So just so we, I don't think anybody doesn't already understand that, but I still wanted to show that. And in the same way, what is the cup? And we've already looked at this. This is put for the contents. And Matthew 26 and 27. We'll just look at these three verses real quick. Well, actually, six verses, but 26, 27. You see, it says, "And when he had taken a cup," and also at the end of that, "they are to drink from it." But then down in verse 29, you see what is actually being partaken is, it says, verse 29, "But I say to you, I will not drink of this fruit of the vine." So we see this idea that this drinking or taking the cup and drinking from it is drinking the fruit of the vine. Now in Mark 14:23, we'll see the same idea. Look at Mark's account. Says, and when he had taken a cup and given thanks, he gave it to them, and they all drank from it. Okay, so they drank from it. Now, if you go down to verse 25, in the middle of it, it's talking about never again drink of this or the fruit of the vine. So again, we see this idea of this cup, this it, is put for the fruit of the vine. And also in Luke 22, 17. Luke 22:17. "And when he had taken a cup and given thanks, he said, 'Take this and share it among yourselves.'" Even verse 20. Again, it said, "In the same way he took the cup after they had eaten, saying." But in verse 18, we understand what this cup is. It says the fruit of the vine in the middle of verse 18. So we see that this cup is put for, or this is the container, but it's speaking of the actual contents, which is the fruit of the vine. Are there any questions or comments or thoughts or anything about... Yes, sir.
Craig, I want to go back to where we started class, and back to John 6:35, 15:56. You made this point in your lesson, and I just want to kind of reinforce the point. So, you know, last Wednesday we were talking about breaking the bread. And we say, well, today people say you got to break the bread. But we see, and we say this in our lesson, that breaking bread really means during that century, during that time, to distribute, to share the food, as we look at the context. And there's some phraseology being used here, 50 through 56, that would be is very foreign to us. It also explains the meaning, and that is eat the flesh and drink the blood. I think you pointed out what that means. You know, for example, drinking blood, the Jews could not drink blood. Leviticus 10 tells us that it was sin. It's against the law to drink blood. So, but as he's talking to the people there, Jews and whatnot, they understood that to mean something, drinking blood and eating his flesh. And as you pointed out in your lesson, but just want to reinforce that, what that means to that society back then was to believe in. And in this case, believe in who Jesus was. And that was some terminology that we don't use today. And, you know, people get really twisted off what that means. But it's clear here, John, that you abide in me, you believe in me, and that's to eat his body and drink his blood. That's just phraseology,
right?
Really foreign to us. Now, if we take that meaning then, and now go to all these verses we looked at, let's go back to Matthew 26:26. We've read these verses many times as we study about the Lord's Supper. And, you know, verses, 26, it says, take, eat, this is my body. I believe there's two instructions there for us. And maybe we always get the first instruction. We see the pattern. Take, okay, we eat the unleavened bread. But back then, what did that mean? That's to believe in. So I think, sometimes I think maybe we miss the point. Maybe we get the point in other verses, but to them, to eat or to drink flesh and blood meant to believe in. So here when it says, take, eat, this is my body, yes, we follow the pattern of unleavened bread. There's also another meaning to that society, and I think for us to pick up, is that it also means to believe in the body. What the body represents is, you know, Christ's, you know, crucified body. So I think both those, and having to understand that phraseology, and of course, you know, the Catholics get twisted off and they think it's a literal thing. But as we've done here, so many places here, if you go and look at how they use the words and what it means. And so I think it also helps us when we read these verses here. You know, why is he saying eating his body and drinking the blood? Back then, to the Jews, it knew it meant to believe in. So I think that's, and John kind of really, you see it real clearly there in John as you point out in your lesson.
Good point. Thank you, Robert.
Next comment, talking about the fruit of the vine. We know as we take of the fruit of the vine, very specific, we take grape juice. We look at all these verses, we have no description of any grape juice in this. Fruit of the vine, well,
right.
What is that? And again, when some things like that happened, evidently they understood back then that that was grape juice. And someone might challenge us, well, how do you know that? So there's two verses here, two of them, maybe look at one. To the Israelites and also the Hebrews, fruit of the vine meant grapes. Genesis 49:11 is one. That was to the Hebrews. But let's go to Isaiah 5:2. The two key verses that get to put out in our margin on top of the fruit of the vine is, you know, we're very specific. Well, where do we get the authority? Well, that society understood. Isaiah 5:2. That fruit of the vine meant grapes. Here's Isaiah 5:2. Again, it's talking about Judah and Jerusalem, but just note what he says here. When he dug it around, he removed its stones and planted in it the choicest vine. There's our vine, fruit of the vine. And he built a tower, and in the middle of it, and he hewed out a vine vat in it, and he expected it to produce good grapes, but it produced only worthless ones. So then he goes Genesis 49:11. See the same thing, how vines and grapes are being used interchangeably. So that's how he understood that. So when they heard fruit of the vine, their mind automatically went to grape juice. Mm-hmm. We don't necessarily do that,
right.
But we have, that's how they use it.
Okay. Thank you, Ryan. Appreciate your comment. Are there any other thoughts or comments or on anything on the Lord's Supper before we go into our next class? Next lesson? All right then. Well, if you'll turn over to your page 82, then we'll start lesson 7. Did I give everybody a lesson 7? Does everybody have one? Okay. In lesson 7, we're going to speak of giving. Okay, now after this will be the final lesson that y'all will get from me, though. After we're done with this class, or this lesson, it's going to leave one, maybe two classes, depending on how quick we get through this. But then we'll go over, we're going to have some review that we'll do. So, lesson 7, giving. Now we'll see that as we look to these things, we're going to see that giving has to do with our heart. Okay, this idea is not unique to giving, But there are things we are told that we should do and things we should be doing. But when we have the right attitude, it's not just a need to do them. It should be, there should be a want there. Okay? These are things that we should want to do. And God's will should be our will. Okay? We should want to do what He would have us to do. So, when we give, it should be out of a love for God and His people. Keep in mind that all that we have, or all that we have that is good, God has given us this. God has provided these things. These things come from Him. God is the one that provides these natural blessings we have. Okay? These beauties we see each day. These physical blessings we have. The abilities to have homes and all these things, or the jobs, and however it is that He provides these things for us. But He provides for us. And most of all, spiritual blessings. These spiritual blessings we have in Christ. I just mentioned that at the front of this lesson because although giving is a physical thing, okay, as we give, as far as the money part, of course, there's mental involved. I'm not excluding that, but it's a physical thing. But we have much more to be thankful for than just physical things. Because God provides us in all the areas. And we must remember that this physical thing that we're given, and that what we're having a share in, is for God's work. Okay? That's something that we need to keep in mind. So, when God commands things, it is for good. And what I mean by that is we know that if we will listen to His counsel, it is always for our good or the good of others. So remember, as we do this, it is God's will. And it is for the benefit of others. Plus, not to exclude, it does benefit us as well. But as we give, this is to have a share in that work. So as we look at this lesson, I hope we will better understand how it helps others. That which we give is for the Lord's work. That is, supporting the local work, supporting preachers, whether local or other men, and also saints that are in need. So, and what we give as physical is reaped spiritually. And our, of course, as we give with the right heart, that benefits us because it pleases God. But I had a, when I'm saying that, I also had another thing in mind. Also, as we give, this might support physical needs, okay? This physical needs that we are supporting, the benefit of that might be helping other people with spiritual needs. Just an example. When you think of preacher support. Although, when we give, this is going to support them or help them financially, but not only does it do that, as that is taking place, that allows them to teach and to help others. So, it does help spiritually, because it helps the spiritual needs of others. And when we're supporting these men, we have a share in that. As we look at this subject of giving, I'm going to break this down basically into three sections. We'll look at our attitude towards giving, creature support, and when / amount of giving. So, Roman numeral 1, attitude towards giving. If we're wanting to please God, let's remember, even when we started this very class, this idea of worship, when we worship, it's because of His worthiness. And if we understand that, and if that is truly why we're doing it, then we're going to do it in the way that He wants. So, we need to keep that in mind as we do these things, and as we are wanting to please God, okay, because that we should want to please God. As we're wanting to please Him and be able to be used by Him, then if that's really what we want, what's our attitude about this going to be?
A
willing and serving attitude. Okay. So, what is this giving? Who is giving, and to whom is it for? So let's look at 1 Corinthians 16:1 and just see what we can gain from this passage. Okay, 1 Corinthians 16:1 says, "Now concerning the collection for the saints, as I directed the churches of Galatia, so do you also." So we ask the question, what is giving? Who is giving, or who is giving, and to whom is it for? Now, in 1 Corinthians 16:1, what can we learn? Who is Paul speaking to, number one?
Christians in Corinth.
So the Corinthian church, or the saints in Corinth, that's who, number one, Paul is addressing. Now, what is he speaking about?
Collection for the saints.
Okay, the collection for the saints. So this is a collection from the saints, because he's talking about the Corinthians, talking to the Corinthians, this collection from the saints for the saints. Now, note that Paul tells them that he is directing them as he did the churches in Galatia. So, this was not unique to Corinth, but how Paul directed all the churches. Okay? What about, are there any comments or thoughts on that? Okay? What about Acts 4:32? Okay, Acts 4:32. "And the congregation of those who believed were of one heart and soul, and not one of them claimed that anything belonging to him was his own, but all things were common property to them." Okay, so in Acts 4:32, who is being spoken about?
Congregation.
Okay, the congregation of those who believed, or the church. Okay, so we see there that all was common. Now, what were they doing?
Collecting property.
Okay, so collecting property or giving. Now, verse 32 shows that none claimed that anything belonging to him was his own. Okay, and also it says, but all things were common. So we see this idea of not their own, but being common. So None claimed that anything belonging to him was his own, but all things were common property to them. Okay? Verse 34 even shows that there was not a needy person among them. Now, who would a person among them be? Okay, a believer. So there was not a needy believer among them. Okay, so this was from believers for believers.
Yeah. People would say, well, that's them being everybody. Church, you have to, the scope of the church there. I mean, that worked there, not everybody. See, that extends outside everybody. They're trying to take care of everybody. Well,
Well, yeah, and the verse shows who the them is. You had a comment, Wally?
I know you're dealing with that. I just want to make one comment for the DJs.
Okay.
This. So we don't get back into thinking this is a command for our example of communism, in fact, that is sharing all property.
Right.
And the verse goes on. The other verses go on to explain that. In verse 34, there is not a needy person among them, for all who are owners of houses, to sell them, bring proceeds, like the apostles need. So, you know, here when it's talking about all things common, I didn't, whatever I owned, I didn't feel like I had I didn't have the desire to keep it when I see my brother in need.
Right.
It was common in that sense.
Right.
Common.
Right, right.
And you see that also.
We don't have access to Wally's checking account.
Yours is yours.
Right.
And you can do with what you want to do with it.
We all live on one big ranch.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's a good point, because I'm sure some do use this verse to
live on the communes.
So are there any more thoughts or comments on that? Anybody want to build on that? I mean, because we just have a couple more minutes, we can do that, or I can go on to the next verse. No more thoughts? Okay. Well, let's look over at 2 Corinthians then. In 2 Corinthians 8:4, let's see here. We're going to read 8:4. Actually, let's start in verse 3. For I testify that according to their ability and beyond their ability, they gave of their own accord. Begging us.
Where are you?
I'm sorry. 2 Corinthians 8:3.
Are you in 2 Corinthians?
Yes.
In chapter 8.
Yes. Does it read like that?
Does everybody else's read like
that? Okay. That's the way mine reads. Okay. Well, you got that wrong version.
No, I've got the authorized version.
Okay, so 2 Corinthians 8:3. For I testify that according to their ability and beyond their ability, they gave of their own accord, begging us with much urging for the favor of participation in the support of the saints. Now, if we'll look down at, we'll read verses 6 and 7. So we urge Titus that as he had previously made a beginning, so he would also complete in you this gracious work as well. But just as you abound in everything, in faith, and utterance, and knowledge, and in all earnestness, and in the love we inspired in you, see that you abound in the gracious work also. So,
What if mom's is so different, what is yours say?
Well, usually it's just like a couple of words different here and there, but I mean, this is a lot different.
So what does it say?
Well, it means the same thing for like verse 3. It says, I bear record that beyond their power they were willing of themselves. Instead of ability, they used power. So,
oh.
A lot of little stuff, but in the beginning it was like, what?
Okay. So, still same, similar idea.
Yeah.
So, 8:4 calls it the support of the saints. And then what is being described in verses 6 and verses 7? I might not be clear on that question. But
gracious work.
Okay, gracious work. We noticed that term used, I think, twice in there. So this is called a gracious work. Then verse 8 says, I am not speaking this as a command, as proving through earnestness of those for the sincerity of your love also.
Sincerity of love?
Sincerity of love, right, of love also. And so verse 4, when we looked at it, it speaks of the favor of participation in the support of the saints. Are there any thoughts and comments on anything we've looked at? Yes, sir.
Just one comment, talking about, hey, you want to see a verse about attitude, verse about these people, verse 5, when we jumped over.
Right.
How did we expect that they first gave themselves to the Lord and to us by the will of God? It kind of goes back to, you know, what's the prime mover? The prime mover is worship for God, our view of God, His grace for us.
Okay.
And what does it call for in us?
All right, good point. Well, thank you all very much, and we'll pick up